We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. Or visit preborn.com.
The feature-length documentary Culture Warrior, Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency, premiering November 11th, chronicles the life and ministry of Don Wildman. It takes you through the founding of the National Federation for Decency, what has become AFA. It's a call to stand firm for righteousness and shows how that resolve can make a huge difference in our world.
If we lose this cultural war, we're going to have a hedonistic, humanistic society.
Find out more and watch the trailer at culturewarrior.movie.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Wednesday, March 19th, and so much news going on. The first headline that is absolutely great this morning is that the NASA astronauts have returned home. This coming from the New York Post. The U.S. astronauts stranded on the International Space Station are home at last, more than 9 months after their days-long jaunt into orbit turned into a headline-grabbing space odyssey. And so just before 6 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, they splashed down off the coast of Tallahassee, Florida, concluding a 17-hour return journey from the ISS aboard a SpaceX Crew Dragon Freedom capsule. Their triumphant homecoming came a baffling 278 days behind schedule. When they first arrived at the International Space Station in June 2024, they were scheduled to stay for just about 10 days. So the rapid response from 47, of course, Team Trump, says promises made, promises kept. Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA posted this on X. While Democrats are burning down Tesla's dealerships, SpaceX just saved these two astronauts who Joe Biden left stranded. NASA gets $25 billion a year and couldn't do this. So I'm waiting for the Hollywood movie because obviously, you know, that's coming. But let's also turn to some of the world news. So President Trump talked with Vladimir Putin yesterday on the Russia-Ukraine conflict, and Putin agreed to a 30-day ceasefire on Ukraine's energy infrastructure. So this coming from Fox News. Russian President Vladimir Putin on Tuesday ordered his military to adhere to a 30-day ceasefire on Ukraine's energy infrastructure, but he did not extend the temporary truce to the active front lines or civilian population. So obviously, I think Trump was looking for a little bit more and a more long-term ceasefire, but at least we have this 30 days. So let's welcome in Matt Tiermand, who is a journalist and political strategist. So Matt, overall, where do things stand? Is this a win for Trump? Is it a win for Ukraine or Russia or kind of all of the above or maybe nobody?
I think at this point, nobody. It is way too early to see. You have to recall, if you're a student of history in Central and Eastern Europe, that this is exactly what Russia does. It speaks out of both sides of its mouth. The only agreement that they fully signed on to is that they would halt attacks on energy infrastructure, knowing that this is a line that Trump wants to draw in the sand, because to stabilize the region for security, the first key point is to defend the energy infrastructure. But Russia, again, will give itself every optionality to say one thing and do another. All you have to do is look at during the first year of the Ukrainian invasion, they took over cities, and then they would agree to humanitarian corridors to let people out, and then they would bomb them. So, you know, with Russia, there's always a game behind the game. They're still evaluating what they're going to be able to get away with. Putin made no concessions on, what troop movements he would allow to go back toward Russia, what land he would allow Ukraine to continue to maintain its sovereignty over. That would probably be the next phase of discussion. So he agreed in small principle to sort of throttle back with this energy infrastructure, avoid the bombing of that for now. But I don't think there's anything concrete that's come from this. So they'll both go around saying, Trump and Putin, that, look, we're on the road to peace, we're meeting, we're talking, et cetera, et cetera. But Russia's just going to use this as a opportunistic lever to evaluate what it can get away with in the next phase.
Well, and that all makes sense. And so of course, Zelensky is suggesting that, he's okay with this and moving forward with it. And so what should Trump's next move be? And I mean, I'm still wondering why exactly the United States is engaged in this anyways.
Well, we have huge trading relationships with Europe, which this invasion has destabilized. We've inherited certain obligations, especially with NATO, and Ukraine is a NATO peripheral border country. During the earlier parts of this invasion, there was an acceleration of Russian and Belarusian activity toward the Polish border, which, if Poland is formally breached and invokes Article 7, well, we have a treaty obligation to go to war as a member of NATO. Thankfully, it did not reach that point. The next steps, and by the way, it's very important to note, Zelensky, had an offer on the table that was very, very good. We you and I spoke about it on this channel a few weeks ago, with a mineral and rare earth mineral and energy natural resource extraction deal that would have given him an implicit U.S. security guarantee, and he gamed it. The rumors are with the push of Democrat political actors in the NGO sphere, the revolving door of those in the national security complex and think tanks, as well as European leaders who are very aligned against Trump. And as a result, he is now just kind of a hapless bystander to the discussion of the sovereignty of the country in which he rules. It is probably coming to a head after his attempted gamesmanship that Ukraine is going to have an election, and somebody who is well better placed to have these conversations trilaterally with the U.S. and Russia should come into power, because Zelensky has lost quite a good amount of his legitimacy since that Oval Office meeting when he had telegraphed previous to it that he would accept the energy deal and then did not. Why are we there? That's a question that will be debated for many years, but here we are, 40 years on or so since the fall of the Berlin Wall, and we are still stabilizing a post-Soviet, post-communist region. And on some level, it is certainly good for the world that Russia does not take over the entire sphere politically that it had from post-Yalta through the Berlin Wall. I definitely think that is in the Western interest.
Yeah, that's valid. But you mean to tell me, Matt Tiermand, that Ukraine's interests would be better served by somebody who isn't a prolific actor and has appeared at basically Ukraine's version of drag queen story time and, some of these other things with Zelensky. But he's continued to maintain that elections can't happen during wartime. And so do you think he's actually going to be forced into this? And is there somebody that has risen to prominence, at least that we're aware of, that would challenge him?
Well, a couple things to unpack. It is in their legal system and their constitution that under war, there's a martial law structure, and this happens in a lot of countries. So how do you have an election in a country? And this is a valid point. When a good chunk of your territory that you have sovereignty over, where you have citizens that would have the right to vote, has now been invaded and your kids are being kidnapped and moved into, the hostile invaders' land, and there's no mechanism to secure the vote. So, how do you execute that? That's something that's going to have to be worked through. It is a little unfair of you to say, you're using a Twitter-type talking point, drag queen story hour. Those videos that, the Twitterati like DC Drano and other great luminaries of geopolitics in the 21st century share are from, he was a comedic actor who ran Ukraine's essentially Saturday Night Live. So there's a video of him in fishnets and high heels. he is mocking LGBT culture and the perversions therein that are encroaching from the West into Central Europe. It is a mockery, and that has been used as a leitmotif to say, oh, see, this is a lefty. That's unfair and it's inaccurate, and it's been spread by, you know, again, the Twitterati luminaries, which know nothing, have never been to the region, don't understand the culture and the history. So that's a little bit unfair. I'll push back on you on that. In terms
fair.
Of heir apparent, the name that's been sort of bandied about is Zhelezhny, Valery Zhelezhny, who's currently the Ukrainian ambassador to the United Kingdom. He was the head of the, essentially their equivalent of the Joint Chiefs, the head of the Consolidated Armed Forces. And him and Zelensky butted heads early on in the first year and a half of the invasion on the military stratagems. And he got pushed out and sent to the UK. He seems to have quite a bit of popular support. And would be somebody that a lot of different players would be able to do business with. Look, Zelensky did receive an honest mandate. He didn't come out of nowhere any, you know, more than or less than, you know, Barack Obama or many other or Donald Trump, who wasn't a politician, but was a cultural figure. Zelensky was an actor who did a politically oriented show, a sitcom, and then got more vocal, and he got elected. I mean, previous to Zelensky, had Poroshenko, who was an oligarch and a crook. And that was in the first honest election since Yanukovych was deposed. Yanukovych was put there by the Soviets. They stuffed the ballot in the east of the country, the same parts of the country that they now have had control over since 2014, post the Crimean invasion. So democracy's messy. You get good characters, you get bad characters. His mandate was certainly legitimate, the original mandate that Zelensky received. Would that be renewed right now? That is yet to be determined, but probably given his geopolitical missteps, it would be time for a election and somebody where there could be a renewed hope that cooler heads and conversations could prevail.
And speaking with Matt Tiermand, who is a journalist and political strategist, with a different take than we've heard so far on the Russia-Ukraine issue, and I really appreciate that, actually, Matt. And so in the last 5 minutes or so I have with you, let's turn to Gaza and the conflict in the Middle East between Hamas and Israel. So the Gaza ceasefire there was shattered, this headline coming from CNN, Gaza ceasefire shattered as Israel launches strikes on the enclave. So a lot has happened over the last 48 hours there. What is the update? And Netanyahu is saying this is only the beginning and that Hamas will be hammered until they are thoroughly destroyed and all the hostages return home.
Well, let's hope that's true. The ceasefire was enacted upon good faith with the caveat that both sides would come to the table and hostages would be returned. Of course, Hamas, much like Putin in Russia, as we just discussed, and much like, you know, the Soviets who backed PLO in generations of yore, the last few generations, they also are playing a game. And the game is, how can we lie, cheat, and steal and continue to cause chaos and damage so that we could destabilize our opposition, which is Israel. And Israel, you know, in good faith, especially given the turnover in American leadership, said, okay, we will give it a quick try to see if maybe they have the fear of God put into them with this regime change in the West, knowing that Israel's handcuffs would be taken off and they'd be allowed to fight back and maybe cripple and decimate Hamas that much further. Well, Hamas did not return hostages. Hamas has also spoken out of both sides of their mouth. So Israel is much less feckless than any Western party, and they are going to continue what they were doing before, which is uproot and decimate Hamas. And I hope they continue to do that and finish the job, because if Hamas is not giving back the hostages, then that's the base level pretext of a good faith conversation, and they're not. So go out there and continue to turn Gaza into rubble until it can, you know, be rebuilt without Hamas and without a culture of people who will vote in terrorists who mass murder innocent Israeli civilians, many of whom were peace activists looking for a two-state solution in the Gaza envelope. So, you know, let Israel cook, as the meme says.
Well, and the White House seems to agree, at least in part, with that type of rhetoric, backing Netanyahu and our Israel allies. And so just in the last minute we have, where is Trump then in all of this, or where should he be?
You know, Trump Trump's a transactional deal maker and quite good at it, and that is what's necessary in geopolitical discussions and debates. So he attempted in good faith to get this whole drama and battle to recede through diplomacy. It's not taking. He has certainly always been on the side of Israel, more so than any president in modern history. And so knowing that we're dealing with, you know, 7th century savages who only understand violence, he did the necessary optical first move of, okay, let's give diplomacy a chance. It didn't work. Now bomb them back into the 7th century. I don't think he's going to put any restrictions the way the Biden administration did, or, you know, Western European leftist globalist elites have attempted to do on Israel. Netanyahu and the Israeli machine, who is built for this level of defense of their sovereignty, will fight back, and I think they will finish the job finally this year.
Yeah, all right. Well, Matt Tierman, really appreciate your commentary, and it'll be very interesting to see where exactly all of this goes as we continue to look at the world stage and then also Trump's involvement. And certainly, I'm just thankful that it's not Kamala Harris trying to talk to Putin and Netanyahu and all of these things, so we can at the very least be grateful for that. But you can also follow Matt Tierman on X, and he is a journalist and political strategist, and also, you know, has some really good insights and investigations through some of his other organizations there as well. So always appreciate your time, Matt. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. As we celebrate the many pro-life victories going forward, we rejoice. Preborn's network of clinics have a unique opportunity to advance even further without political persecution. But what does this look like? Preborn is the greatest threat to the abortion industry by rescuing on average 200 babies' lives a day, and they are putting a serious dent into the abortion holocaust. But there are still thousands of babies who are slain daily, and Preborn's goal is to rescue them all. With the help of the pro-life community, meaning you and me, we can save so many more. Please join us in saving all of these precious lives. The ultrasound is the game changer. Once a mother hears that precious heartbeat, she is twice as likely to choose life. If you consider yourself pro-life, we need your help. One ultrasound is just $28. Five ultrasounds are $140. $5,000 sponsors ultrasounds for the entire Preborn network for an entire day. So how many lives can you save? Every child is a beautiful gift from God, so please join this cause. To donate securely, please dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, continuing with this controversy over President Trump and his administration ordering the members of Tren de Aragua to be deported. They're the alleged Venezuelan gang members. And the district court ordered that the plane actually be turned around, as if a district court judge has any jurisdiction over international waters, which is a whole other problem in and of itself. But now some members of Congress, including Representative Brandon Gill and others, are calling for this judge to be impeached for not following the law. And Chief Justice John Roberts issued a very rare statement yesterday saying that impeaching federal judges is not an appropriate response, and suggesting that even if Article III judges totally ignore the law or completely political, absolutely out of line, that's for the appellate courts to resolve, and it's fine that they just continue in that capacity. So let's get reaction now from Representative Marlon Stutzman from the great state of Indiana. So, you know, I'm old enough, Representative, to remember when everybody during the Trump impeachments We're saying that impeachment is a quasi-political exercise, and you don't have to have any kind of legal basis. It's totally political, and it's totally fine to impeach Donald Trump. So is that just the standard only for Republicans, and now the Chief Justice is suggesting something different for an Obama-appointed judge? I mean, that's kind of how I see it, what's going on here, and good morning.
Apparently so, Jenna. Great to be with you again this morning. Yeah, you know, this is so ironic watching the whole narrative with President Trump back in office and a Republican House and Senate, and, you know, to see the narrative that, you know, what's good for me is not good for thee. And that's what the Democrats and the left have been doing for so many years. We put up a post yesterday about President Obama talking about cutting waste, fraud, and abuse at high numbers. And so that kind of reminded us of the Doge team and what Doge is doing. And Nancy Pelosi supported it, and so did some others. But, yeah, you know, these federal judges, you know, simply sit on their perch and like to put out their decrees on what they believe America should be. And, you know, I agree with Justice Roberts to a point. It's like, you know what? You're the Supreme Court justice. You should be speaking to the judiciary as well, not just to the executive or legislative branch, but speak to the judiciary and keep them in their lane. And so, for them to try to, for a judge to try to tell the executive, I mean, this is not even the Supreme Court justice that was telling the judge to turn the plane around. This was a low-level court judge that was trying to tell the president of the United States, elected by the whole country, to turn those planes around, bring those prisoners back. They haven't had due process. That's just malarkey. And so I think that the president is right to do what he's doing. He's keeping America safe, and he's really truly representing the voice of the people after this past election.
And what a great point, Representative, to say that, you know, that Chief Justice John Roberts should be talking to the judiciary, not taking swipes at a co-equal or at least coordinate branch, because yep, this did appear to be a political statement, which undermines the legitimacy of his statement altogether. And I agree with you that I'm not just for impeaching judges kind of willy-nilly, like, oh, we disagree with their opinion, so they're gone. No, it's if they actually violate their oath of office. And, you know, Article 3 provides for lifetime tenure on good behavior. But what exactly does that mean? I don't think has ever been clearly defined by the Supreme Court itself, which is ironic. But I'm all for impeaching judges when they step over their authority, as this district court clearly did. So your colleague, Representative Brandon Gill, who I'm a huge fan of, I think he's doing a phenomenal job as a freshman congressman. Do you support the articles of impeachment that he's filing?
Yeah, you know, first of all, I give shout out to Brandon Gill, great guy, great family, and is a rising star in the Republican Party. And I told him yesterday, you know, put me on as a sponsor of his articles of impeachment. And here's why. It's, you know, we know it's likely not going to happen because we can't get 67 votes in the Senate. But the fact has to be made, and this is why it's so important to push back, because if we don't push back, they're going to continue to do these ridiculous rulings. And there has to be a message sent to the other branch, the judiciary branch, that we're watching. And there is a group of us in the House, and I'm sure there's a group in the Senate as well, that are tired of these judges legislating from the bench. And you know, it does become political. I had the chance to go to dinner one time with Justice Scalia, and Trey Gowdy actually set it up. It was an incredible, surreal moment to be having dinner with Justice Scalia. And this is about 10, 15 years ago. And he told us one thing that I'll never forget. He's like, don't let yourselves think that the judiciary isn't political. He's like, we go to the same cocktail parties. We love to go talk about what's going on in the political world and around Washington, D.C. And so that's just always stuck with me, is while they are supposed to be impartial, they are still human and they still are in the political world and government. So I'm not surprised that, and I think we'll probably see more of this, that the Democrats and the left are going to continue just to run to the judiciary, because they're going to run to these lower courts, too. That's where they have their friends to get the decisions handed down that they want to fit their narrative,
to say that President Trump is out of line. So I support Brandon doing this, and I'm going to help him do whatever I can, because we have to push back on these guys that are trying to govern from their little perch wherever they're at.
Excellent. And I fully support that. And I'm also totally fangirling over the fact that you got to have dinner with Justice Scalia. That's amazing. I got to meet him very briefly one time in law school. He came for a Federalist Society event, and I was just so overwhelmed. I think I could barely get out like, "Hello, Mr. Justice," and that was about it. But he was very kind.
I don't get starstruck very often, but I sure did that night with him.
I can imagine. And I wish that we had someone in the Chief Justice role and that seat that understood those realities like Justice Scalia articulated, because, you know, you're absolutely right that they're in D.C. and so they're going to the same, you know, parties and things, and they're still humans, they're still affected and by politics, they still have political views, even though they're supposed to set them aside. So, you know, this raises an interesting question that has been kind of kicked around in conservative circles for a while about, you know, moving the Supreme Court out of D.C. and, you know, kind of revamping the entire judiciary and perhaps, you know, revisiting some of the ways certainly that like under the Judiciary Act, which Congress has control over, but even amending the Constitution through either Congress or the states in the Article 5 process. What's your view on judicial reform to maybe try to cure some of these problems that, you know, obviously the founders did their best on some of these things, but they couldn't have remotely anticipated what the world looks like today in terms of how politics is just a 24/7 news cycle that these justices are immersed in, like we all are?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jenna. And, you know, one that I think would be really tough to tackle. It's kind of like, you know, going back to, you know, the original intent was for our U.S. senators to be elected by our state legislative bodies rather than having them elected as a whole from our states. And I think there was a lot of wisdom in that decision and why they were elected by the state legislative bodies rather than from the popular vote in each particular state. I think when it comes to judicial reform as well, the founding fathers, and I'd love to go on Capitol tours with David Barton, who has so much history. Just, it's incredible to hear the history from him and what the founding fathers wanted with the Supreme Court. You know, they didn't even have a spot in their own, you know, they didn't have their own building across the street from the Capitol. They had to meet at a downtown tavern, and then they finally got a spot in the basement of the Capitol. And then eventually they got their own ivory tower across the street. And, you know, we do, and again, I am grateful for the court that we have at this point being a conservative court. And again, thanks to Donald Trump and the fact that Roe versus Wade was overturned, and now we can fight the abortion issue at the state level. But I think that what needs to be reminded, and this is where even Justice John Roberts should recall, that what's going to happen when there's a question about the auto pen in the Oval Office after this past administration? We don't know who was in charge. So I think it'd be better if they just, you know, be quiet. And, you know, when these cases come to them, they have to make a very objective decision. And I think that's what we all have to remind ourselves, is that it can't be just targeted towards one administration because maybe you don't like the personality. Because let's go back to the past administration where we don't know even who was running the White House. And so there's going to be a lot of questions that come forward. And I think Trump is doing the right thing by, you know, just coming, you know, bringing one decision after the other. And he knows that some of them are going to get struck down by the courts. But we're just going to have to fight through that right now, because those are the circumstances and that's the playing field. And we're not going to whine about it. We're just going to keep fighting through, unlike them, where they want to stack the court. They want to, you know, they want to move the court to the left, if anything. So I'm so grateful for the conditions that we have right now and the circumstances in D.C. that we've got a conservative president who's willing to fight. And we've got the House and the Senate. We've been sticking together, getting the agenda passed that the American people elected Trump to do.
And I'm speaking with Representative Marlon Stutzman from the great state of Indiana. And, you know, the commentary by Chief Justice Roberts, when he said that there aren't, you know, Obama judges or Trump judges, there's just Article III judges, it seems like, I mean, that should be true in theory, but it's really not when you look at the forum selection and the venue selection that the Democrats, you know, run to their preferred judges that they know are going to rule for them, like this Boasberg guy. And so how do we move forward with a judiciary that is so divided? And thankfully, we, you know, we have the majority on the Supreme Court. Maybe I kind of think it's a 3-3-3, where you have three solid conservatives generally. But, you know, there's always kind of this question mark of where we're going to get the majority. And it shouldn't be a matter of politics or outcome preferred. It should just be a matter of following the law. And we should all at least agree on what the Constitution and the law says. It shouldn't be so political. But where do we go when we have a judiciary that is so divided, that is trying to, you know, literally turn planes around in the middle of the air and not allow the executive to do its job?
I think part of it, Jenna, is in the confirmation process. You know, the fact that we've seen this now all the way back to Mr. Bork when he was nominated to the Supreme Court and what they did to him. We have to have honest brokers in the Senate in these confirmation hearings in the process. And this is where I think the Democrats, they play by a different set of rules. And we just have to realize that. And we don't have to stoop to their level. But at the same time, that's why I think we're winning. I think the American people are finally catching on to the Democrats' game. You know, they will throw anything at a nominee for the Supreme Court if it comes from a Republican president. And it's a very different strategy when it's from a Democrat president, where Republican senators generally vote for the nominee because it's the, they believe, and this is, you know, Senator Lugar from Indiana always had this opinion that it's the president's choice and that he's going to defer to the president unless there's something so obvious that he doesn't deserve, that person doesn't deserve to be on the court. But the Democrats don't play that way. They make things up. They lie. They will do whatever it takes to keep a conservative off the bench. And so we have been better at preparing for that. But I think that that's why the American people are the ones that are going to help fix this problem by basically letting the Democrat Party know that they're out of touch, they're out of line, and that's not the way that we want government to behave or act. And, you know, the media has been the biggest accomplice in this. They've been the ones pushing the narrative out there. I mean, it's just incredible to me that yesterday was one of the most historic days in our nation's history with the astronauts coming back from the International Space Station. And yet some of the major networks couldn't even cover the moment. Because, you know, it would give Elon Musk credit. It would give President Trump credit. And the fact that Elon Musk asked and offered the past administration the ability to go get the stranded astronauts on the space station and it was declined. Again, where is the outrage on the left with that? Again, they're more worried about President Trump getting credit for doing things that we all would expect as Americans to have done by our leaders. But there's no outrage when we find out that President Biden turned down the offer from what he perceived as a political opponent. So, again, the hypocrisy is real. And I think the American people are starting to sniff it out. And that's why the 2026 election is going to be such a big one, because I think that's going to determine whether or not the American people say, hey, we want adults in the room running our government rather than hypocrites that continue to see it only their way.
Yeah, so true. The Democrats are too busy calling Americans greedy for wanting to keep more of our hard-earned dollars, like Chuck Schumer, and also selling their Teslas, like Representative Mark Kelly. And I have to ask you this before we let you go. You have offered to buy Mark Kelly's Tesla, and this has been kind of a back and forth on Twitter or X now that is actually hilarious. What's the story behind that?
Well, you know, I saw his video, and again, it's one of those videos that the Democrats like to post that, you know, they're start swearing and they start calling, you know, names and, you know, and not just names. It's like profanity. And So it's like, okay, you all went out and bought Teslas. You all went and bought EVs, and Elon Musk makes the, you know, the coolest EV on the market, and his was a pretty nice one. And, of course, I think a lot of it's virtue signaling, because then he turns around and he buys a Tahoe, which, hey, great American vehicle as well, but is it about the environment, or is it about the politics of the person who owns Tesla? And, of course, that's what it is. And so when I saw that he was going to sell the Tesla, I was like, hey, I want that one. That's a nice car. And so we tagged him in a post and asked him if he'd be willing to sell it. I wanted to know how many miles were on it and if it was a single car, you know, one-owner car. And we never got a response back. He apparently went and traded it in on a Tahoe. But, you know, again, it goes back to the left. You know, if it fits their narrative, they're all about it. But as soon as somebody on the other side pushes back and calls them out, and what Doge is doing to reveal their ridiculous spending, their fraudulent spending and corruption, they start screaming and hollering that Elon Musk is all of a sudden a bad guy. And so I would have loved to own it, even if it would have been Mark Kelly's car, because it looked like a pretty nice Tesla to me.
Yeah, well, all I'll say to Mark Kelly is big mistake. Big. Huge. So Representative Marlon Stutzman, always appreciate your time, sir. And for everyone who is listening, go and follow the congressman on X at Rep Stutzman. You can also follow him on Instagram, see all of the banter back and forth, the witty commentary, and, you know, also keep up on what's going on in not only Indiana 3, but also what's going on in Washington, D.C. So follow him at Rep Stutzman on X, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Ethics, influence, and new power in a post-mainstream media world. This is the title of the Washington Policy Institute presentation and panel that is happening at the Villages on Wednesday, March 26th. And Cheryl Chumley, who is an author of a brand new book, God Given or Bust, and also an online opinion editor for the Washington Times, will be on that panel, along with Dr. Scott Hayes, the dean of the School of Communication and Arts at Liberty University. And yours truly will be moderating this panel. I'm very honored to attend this event with the Washington Policy Institute. So Cheryl Chumley joins me now to talk more about this event. And Cheryl, I'm really excited about this. This is geared toward journalism students who want to come and actually learn what it means to be a journalist and actually have ethics, not, you know, go work for the AP or the New York Times. So to talk more about what you anticipate from this event and the Washington Policy Institute.
Yeah, first off, thanks for having me today to discuss this. And second off, I'm excited as well and very excited that you're going to be moderating. You're the perfect person for this. It will be so good if people turn out in droves to listen, because it's not just for would-be journalism students, right? It's for members of the community at large who want to peel back the layers and see what's going wrong in the world of journalism over the last, I don't know, decade, last couple decades, particularly ratcheted up under Barack Obama. And I can't wait to start talking about the inside behind-scenes things that I've seen in journalism myself that have violated ethics.
It's so well said. I mean, I could not have imagined how different it is to be on, you know, the inside track of a lot of these media outlets. When I used to do, you know, the whole full circuit when I was representing President Trump and his campaign, and just seeing how segments are put together on media, seeing how reporters ask questions. I mean, I almost daily get a question from a reporter that is so biased just at its inception. It's like, you know where they're going with it. They're not interested in, you know, facts. They're not interested in reporting. It's all a matter of perception and spinning a narrative, which isn't how journalism was intended. But, you know, we go back to yellow journalism, you know, of course, at sort of the inception of all of this. But to you, what will be the most interesting part of this for listeners who maybe want to attend this event? And by the way, it is free. It's free admission. You can go to Eventbrite and RSVP for the sponsor of for the Washington Times. And I'll post this on my social media at Real Jenna Ellis after the program. And we'll also put it in the podcast link commentary so that everybody, if you want to come to the Villages on March 26th at 7:30 p.m., you can. But Cheryl, you know, what do you think is the main, you know, issue going on here? And I know that's a really large question for a small amount of time.
Yeah, it's, you know, the most interesting thing to me is going to be fielding questions from the audience, right? Because I think that the American people as a whole are just fed up with what they're seeing in the military. And, you know, it's never been a matter of bias to me in media. It's always been a matter of concealing that bias and pretending that there isn't bias. I don't have a problem with left-leaning media or right-leaning media. Just don't pretend like you're not out there asking loaded questions to push a secret behind-scenes agenda and then deny and deceive the American public with it. And, you know, you raise a good point, Jenna, about the questions you field from the media yourself, right? Particularly when you are associated with political campaigns and political work within the White House. And from a journalist perspective, I look at those loaded questions and I despair over the field of journalism because, like you, when you entered law, I'm sure you had a very clear idea and a passion for truthful constitutional application of law. And then you got involved with so many lawyers who probably had agendas that were anti-American. It's the same in media for the good journalists out there. When I started in journalism, I had maybe, you know, dove eyes or doughy eyes about journalism and the power and influence and the rights that you could achieve by reporting truths, only to be quickly informed that many in the media didn't have that same sort of principles. And so it would be really nice to have a media in America that admitted and acknowledged there is no such thing as 100% unbiased journalism, but at the same time did their best to report the truth and be honest with their readers and consumers of news.
And yeah, I absolutely agree with you on that that analogy of law school. I mean, it was so depressing, frankly, to go into practice seeing that, you know, the idealism that I approach the philosophy of law and how, and even journalism, you know, as my undergraduate degree, going in, you know, wanting to uphold all of these ideals, when you get down to the nuts and bolts of practicing, so often so many of our colleagues are not utilizing these pathways and these, I think, enormous responsibilities of practice in journalism or law toward a better society, but for whether it's personal gain, whether it's, you know, all kinds of other special interests or other even nefarious purposes, we have to then, as consumers, particularly of media, understand how to notice that and to flag it first. I mean, and in law, we would call this issue spotting. Like, you can't provide a solution if you don't know that there's a problem or there's even risk. And so issue spotting, I think, in journalism is also very important. And it's kind of come down, I think, Cheryl, to, you know, a lot of conservatives would say, well, we just can out of hand dismiss anything that the fake New York Times says, and we can just believe anything that Fox News says. And I'm going, well, wait a minute, that's not where we should draw the line, right?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because, you know, I wasn't familiar with that term, issue spotting, but that is exactly what needs to be applied to consumers of news when they regard the media, because there was no greater damaging media, I thought, during the coronavirus clampdown on individual liberties, right, than Fox News. And the reason why is because there was so much misinformation and deception, purposeful and maybe inadvertent, being put out by the other media that conservatives in America who look for freedom and liberty and individualism turned into Fox to get the truthful news on COVID. And Fox was more damaging because they put out the same sort of deceptive information that all the other media groups did, but they did it under guise as being the truth-telling conservative source where people could go to get their trusted news. And because of that, there were so many who actually knew better and should know better about individualism and God-given freedoms in America that willingly did stupid things like wearing face masks and two face masks and three face masks because Anthony Fauci wasn't challenged on Fox News just as he wasn't challenged on the other media outlets. So you're absolutely right, and I love that term.
Yeah, well, we will be talking much more about this, and you've gotten just a little bit of a preview of the amazing commentary from Cheryl Chumley on the panel and also Dr. Scott Hayes that will be at this Washington Policy Institute presentation, Ethics, Influence, and New Power in a Post-Mainstream Media World. I will post the link where you can register. This is March 26, 7:30 at the Villages. And I don't, Cheryl, is this going to be live streamed as well for people, you know, who kind of all over the country, or do we not know that? Maybe we need to talk to Wayne about that.
Yeah, I think we're going to talk with Wayne about that.
Okay, all right. Well, because I know that that's going to be a question. All right, I will ask him that. Yes. And for everybody who will be writing in, I'll ask about live streaming this event. But for now, if you can be there in person, please go to the Eventbrite page and register. And Cheryl, really excited to see you next week at this event. Thanks so much. And let's turn now to the AFA Foundation and welcome in Riley Wildman, who is the director of our AFA Foundation. And Riley, thanks so much for joining. And tell us, for those who haven't heard, what the AFA Foundation is and why it exists.
Yes, Jenna, thank you so much again for having me on this morning. And I was just going to briefly tell your listeners a little bit about the foundation and what we do here. It mainly exists to what we call leave a legacy that lasts for generations to come through different outlets here. And one of those outlets is a charitable gift annuity. And a charitable gift annuity is simply just a contract between American Family Association and our donors. And the minimum amount to fund the gift annuity is $2,000 or anything above that that they can give to American Family Association. It can be set up as a single life or a joint life that they can give to the ministry. And in return, they receive a permanent income coming back to them for the rest of their life. And when they pass away, Jenna, anything left over is a gift back to American Family Association. So that's one of our main, I guess, tools, so to speak, that we have in the foundation called a charitable gift annuity, as well as just stock donations that they can leave to American Family Association through the charitable gift annuity or just an outright gift, as well as leaving American Family Association in their will.
Yeah, and this is really an amazing tool, as you mentioned, Riley, because, you know, so many of our listeners often ask, you know, how they can help support AFA and all of our work that and ministry, really, that we get to do here each and every day. And obviously, our Share-a-thon is coming up very soon next month, and that's a great way to participate. But if you want to make a longer lasting impact, then you can consider the AFA Foundation. And there are so many stories as well on the AFA Foundation website of people, you know, who've given, and they have, you know, just some really amazing responses to, you know, how this has impacted their life. And so for someone who's maybe, you know, they might have heard this segment before and heard you speak about it before, and now this is kind of just another ping to say, you know, hey, I've been thinking about it, but I haven't really made the call to Riley and to AFA. What would you encourage them to consider as they may be prayerfully considering whether to participate in this opportunity?
Yes. So I would just say, like you mentioned, Jenna, this is not for everybody. So like you mentioned, Share-a-thon's coming up. If they want to just do a pledge, you know, if they can only do $5 or $10, what we say for a Share-a-thon, you know, that's great. But if they want to do, you know, if they have $2,000 or anything above that and they want to receive permanent income, I would say, you know, that would be something that would be for them, and they're welcome to give us a call here at the foundation. And I can give that number in our website. That's afafoundation.net. Again, that's afafoundation.net, and they can run Jenna illustrations there on our website, plug in their date of birth, the amount that they're thinking about gifting. And then also they can give us a call here at the foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345. And I was listening into your while ago when I was getting plugged in, and I wanted to kind of plug also Weekend with AFA coming up in October. I know you're going to be one of our speakers there here in Tupelo, Mississippi.
Yes, really looking forward to that. So much going on at AFA, and I'm so excited to be a part of all of this. And Riley, thanks so much for the work that you do. And listeners can go to afafoundation.net. You can go to Giving Home, the tabs, how to give, what to give, learn about wills, donor stories, calculators, how to maximize your philanthropic goals and be a difference in people's lives and be remembered for your contribution to benefit not only yourself and your family, but also AFA, and help us fulfill our mission for many years and generations to come. I have loved being part of AFA and the AFR network, and then also on the AFA action, the policy side. So many great things that we're doing to promote the biblical worldview and truth in culture, in politics, on radio, in commentary, and it's really needed in an age where, you know, we have so much that is fake news or just a bad perspective. We always want to be grounded in truth and the biblical worldview. So go to afafoundation.net. And as always, you can reach my team, Jenna at afr.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.